It's baffled scholars for two millennia. It is a puzzle made of multidimensional elements, an enigma with roots that reach back to the dawning of time, perhaps before. Daniel explained part of it. Ezekiel and Isaiah had glimpses into it. John saw it all for the time of the end. That time is now. Join Derek and Sharon Gilbert on a journey that spans the course of history, from Eden to Mount Hermon, from Hermon to Babel, from Babel to Rome, from Rome to the cross, and from there to us. Biblical prophecy is coming true before your eyes, and to understand it, you must discern the times both then and now. It's time to unravel the threads of this all-encompassing prophetic paradox. It's time to unravel Revelation.
Welcome to Unraveling Revelation from Skywatch TV. I'm Derek Gilbert.
I am Sharon Gilbert. I love being Sharon Gilbert. we are back and we're talking once again, this is our third week, talking about the city of Sodom. But I think that because this occurred at the same time that the child of promise was promised to Abraham, to Avram, that and that Sarah laughed about it.
Sure.
I think that all of this is a pivotal moment when the Lord came down personally and he told the fallen realm, guess what I'm about to do? And all of the loyal angels saw, this is what the Lord's about to do, because they don't know the future. They only know what they're told.
That's true.
The fallen realm's the same way. They only know what they can sort of spy on or glean out of their little conferences when they're looking at the scriptures.
Little demon conferences little demon with charts and PowerPoints and presentations trying to figure out Bible prophecy.
PowerPoints that never work properly. But I think the city of Sodom and what occurred there is really important. And
right.
Getting into the idea of Gog of Magog, is it possible that they were trying to bring back this entity that we call Gog?
That's a really good point. I think, and just to kind of emphasize why we're doing this here, if we look at Sodom just on the surface layer, it was because of their wicked lifestyle that God destroyed the city.
Fact, that was part of it.
Well, that was part of it, sure. But if you were going to use that as the justification for it, there are plenty of cities. As Billy Graham once said, if God doesn't destroy the United States for what we're doing here, he owes Sodom and Gomorrah an apology.
I agree with that. Their behavior was ritualistic.
That's the key. It's not just the wickedness. It's what the wickedness was in service of.
And what they were about to
it was in service of.
Achieve.
Yes. Yes. And when I wrote the book, The Second Coming of Saturn, and this is a mild spoiler, but I equate the Roman god Saturn with a number of gods going back to the ancient Mesopotamians, by other names, including El of the Canaanites, Molech, which was just a pejorative term the Hebrews applied to Milcom, who was the god of the Ammonites, who, by the way, was not far from ancient Sodom, also in that Transjordan area. But that entity I equate with the chief of the watchers named in the extra canonical book of Enoch. Got a little bug flying around here.
Yeah.
Shemaiah, who was described as the chief of the watchers who led the rebellion and led his fellow angelic entities into this sin of taking human women and creating the Nephilim.
If you're right, and I think you're onto something, if you're right, and Shemaiah equals El equals Saturn. Then the threshing floor of El,
yes,
which is at the top of Mount Hermon, is possibly, that's why we see that a little spiral configuration wall that's at the summit.
Right, right. Sir Charles Warren found that in 1869.
Because if you've never seen a threshing floor, they're often just a bare spot where you can, you know, take your grain and you can winnow it up, but also sometimes you'll have it trod out first. And sometimes that's accomplished by actually tying an animal to a post so that the animal just goes around and around and around. When you tie them to a post, that they do, it automatically, they're trying to move, especially if you've got food in front of them.
Right.
And so that forms a spiral.
And The point of the spiral on the summit of Mount Hermon, according to scholars, was to pour out a libation or a drink offering into the summit of Mount Hermon, which has been scooped out like a bowl to receive these drink offerings, which is a very old practice. The worship of the dead in ancient Mesopotamia had three key elements. Number one was a communal meal. The family would get together and have a meal. Number two is you called out the names of your dead ancestors so that they would join you at the meal. And number three was pouring out a drink offering for the dead. This is a practice that continues to this very day in cultures all over the world. So you had that practice there. Of course, we see the counterclockwise spiral of the faithful at Mecca around the Kaaba. But we also see it in rituals in ancient Mesopotamia connected to the annual Akitu festival, the New Year's festival, where they would circumambulate the fields to raise a hedge of supernatural protection around the crops.
Almost so, form a crop circle.
Yes, exactly. So around ancient Sodom, you had a ring of dolmens, these funerary monuments that were placed at the base of the city. And as Dr. Stephen Collins, who leads the archaeological dig at the site in Jordan, has pointed out in his book, Finding Sodom, there are more of them clustered there than anywhere else in the Jordan River Valley. Now, the north end of the Sea of Galilee has a huge cluster. That's a giant necropolis. That area between the Sea of Galilee and Mount Hermon is nothing but dolmen fields, which indicates that back in the days of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, down to the time of Moses, there were, and even before Abraham, there were cults of the dead that, well, that would include Gilgal Rephaim, the giant...
Where we've been.
Yes, that giant circular monument on the Golan Heights, which was dated to about 3750 BC. So for millennia, the dead were venerated in that area for some reason. And it seems to center on the idea that this old entity, Shemiyaza El Saturn, who we also suggest is Baal Peor and Molech, worshipped there on the summit of Mount Hermon.
So this entity was probably also worshipped at Sodom.
Very likely.
Because this is right in that whole necropolis area where the demons are reputed to live. The Bible seems to indicate that. And if you're not aware of this, demons are just the spirits of the giants, the Nephilim, the products of humans and fallen angels. And that Shemiyaza was the one who led that. So this is his army.
Exactly. And that relates to what we discussed last week with Ezekiel chapter 39, verse 11, and the end of the war of Gog and Magog, and God burying the travelers east of the sea. That's a reference to the Dead Sea. And the travelers being a term known from pagan texts to refer to these spirits of the Rephaim, in the sense that they were traveling or crossing over from the land of the dead to the realm of the living.
But what if Sodom was very close to accomplishing this? Just the way it appeared that Babel was very close to accomplishing bringing Shemiyaza back. If that's what, again, this is speculation, but if this is what Sodom was trying to achieve, then yes, the Lord would stop it. It was one fulfillment. I will block the travelers. But then there will be a future fulfillment that is eternal.
Yeah. What's really interesting is that the Hebrew term translated Babylon, most places in the Bible, except for the reference in the early chapters of Genesis dealing with the Tower of Babel, it's exactly the same as the words translated Babel. Bab Elu from Akkadian, Bab El in Hebrew means God gate or gate of God or gate of the gods or gate of the God. And I argue in the book, The Second Coming of Saturn, that it means gate of the God, and that what they were trying to do at Babel and what they may have been trying to do at Sodom, may have been trying to do on the summit of Mount Hermon and elsewhere with these rituals was to try to reopen this God gate and allow this old entity out of the netherworld.
So the Lord of now, the Lord of the underworld, the Lord of the gate, the Lord of the dead, they may have been trying to resurrect Saturn, Molech,
Kronos,
Shemiyaza, by whatever name you want to call him. But we get back to this whole thing of Jacob's body being brought by the Egyptians.
Yes.
The Egyptians worship a Lord of the dead.
Yes, Osiris. Yes.
What if they somehow connected this ruin as a place where you could worship Osiris, and that's where you brought your dead?
That's a really interesting point. And, you know, it's a little difficult for us to think that way because we'd like to see Joseph as faithful to Yahweh, to God, all the time.
Well, but of course, he probably was, but he was soaking in Egyptian culture. And true. I don't know that Joseph said, hey, let's go this way. He was, let's face it, in a way, they were really at the mercy of what the Egyptians allowed them to do. Mm-hmm. And so I'm sure that the Pharaoh said, you may go. Make sure you bring him back. He's my guy. Mm-hmm. I can't get along without him because he couldn't.
Bring Joseph back. Yeah.
Yes, exactly. Mm-hmm. So the Egyptian guard, I'm sure military went with him, mm-hmm. that they took him the way that they wanted to worship Jacob before they took him to the Hebron.
Yeah, Jacob's final resting place.
And then they took him home, took mm-hmm. Joseph back. So it may not have been Joseph's idea.
That's true. And the Canaanites referred to that spot where they the threshing floor of Atad, which again, scholars believe was ancient Sodom, mm-hmm. was called Abel Mizraim, or meadow, or the mourning place of the Egyptians.
Exactly.
So it may be that this was a regular place of ritual mourning for the Egyptians. And that's mm-hmm. why Joseph was compelled to go there. That's a really interesting thought.
Well, on the Bible's Greatest Mysteries, we talk with Aaron Lipton, and he has a theory that the tribe of Ephraim and possibly Manasseh also had settled there prior to Moses bringing them back.
Right. So the question then is, how does all of this connect to the end times prophecy of Ezekiel in Ezekiel 38 and 39? Is Osiris Gog of Magog?
That is a big one. That's a book right there.
Yeah.
So we'll have to take a break.
And we'll be back in just a minute with more on Unraveling Revelation.
Call now and take advantage of SkyWatch TV's most groundbreaking deal of the year. With the rediscovery of the ancient prophecies from a mysterious group of prophets and scribes hundreds of years before Christ, your understanding of end times prophecy and the final age of man is about to be forever changed. In Josh Peck's new book, The Lost Prophecies of Qumran, the veil is lifted as you discover how much of what you've been taught about Israel in the first century is incomplete. Shockingly, there were Jewish believers who knew exactly what to expect from the coming Messiah, that he would be God in the flesh, would die for our sins, and even the date of his first arrival. In Josh Peck's new book, The Lost Prophecies of Qumran, you will discover lost prophecies only recently discovered in the Dead Sea Scrolls about the time we are now living in, how the enigmatic group known as the Essenes formed and what influence they had on the New Testament, what hidden feasts and festivals the Essenes celebrated, and what messages the group left behind for believers living in the present age, how the prophecies of Daniel and Revelation fit within the Essene timetable, and how an ancient Jewish calendar actually predicts the prophetic significance of the year 2025. But that's not all. For the first time ever, you'll also receive Dr. Ken Johnson's massive three-book collection entitled The Ancient Mysteries of the Essenes, where Dr. Johnson compiles three of his most groundbreaking research studies on the Dead Sea Scrolls into one massive collection. In Book 1, The Ancient Dead Sea Scrolls Calendar and the Prophecies It Reveals, you will discover the secrets of the mysterious 364-day calendar used by the ancients since the time of creation and how it has been hidden until now for the appointed time. In Book 2, Ancient Testimonies of the Patriarchs, Autobiographies from the Dead Sea Scrolls, you will hear the previously hidden prophetic texts of such patriarchs as Enos, grandson of Adam, Lamech, father of Noah, Amram, father of Moses and Aaron, and even Enoch from the Book of Enoch fame. And in the most shocking revelation yet, Book 3, The Ancient Order of Melchizedek, you will learn astonishing facts about the enigmatic priest Melchizedek, such as why his priesthood was and is different from that of Levi, why the Messiah was ordained after the order of Melchizedek, and how the facts surrounding this mysterious order dramatically affect the theology and practical applications of our Christian walk today. This collection is an absolute necessity for any researcher's library and for those who want to fully step into the minds of the ancients and see the Dead Sea Scrolls like they never have before. Now you can get this incredible collection for your donation of only $35 plus shipping and handling. So don't miss out on SkyWatch TV's most groundbreaking deal of the year, the Lost Prophecies and Ancient Mysteries Collection, available now at SkyWatchTVStore.com. Order now or call 1-844-750-4985.
Welcome back to Unraveling Revelation from SkyWatch TV. I'm Derek Gilbert.
I am Sharon Gilbert. Boy, I need to gulp some tea down.
Me
on that
too,
one.
Boy.
The idea that Osiris and Gog and Shemyaza, the Saturn, what?
I didn't really dig deep into the connection between Osiris and Saturn in the forthcoming book, except to mention that I think that connection is valid because, like Osiris, Saturn, Kronos, El, Enlil, Dagon, Shemayaza all had connections to the netherworld. They were all believed to have been once very powerful entities influencing things here on this earth, but had been either condemned to, relegated to, or banished to the netherworld at some point. It's not by coincidence. They all had filled the same slot in the cosmologies, the religions of the ancient people.
That which goes by any other name.
Right,
will,
right.
Look just as green.
Yes, exactly. The Hittites and the Hurrians had a god named Kumarbi who went through the same cycle. You know, he was the father of the gods, and then he got demoted to the netherworld by his son, the storm god.
If you find this idea really interesting, and you can tell from our reaction that this whole idea is like, wait a minute. Well, we're going to continue talking about this on our own and may even write future books about it. But you can also hear Derek and I talk about it on the very location where Moses looked over and he and the Israelites saw the ruins of the travelers. They saw ancient Sodom.
From Mount Nebo.
Yeah, just go with us to Israel and take the Jordan extension.
Yes.
Go to skywatchinisrael.com and all of the details are there. We're going in 2022 in March and we'll probably go after that, Lord willing.
Well, the question then is, who is Gog of Magog? As we mentioned in the previous segment,
is he
Gog,
Satan?
Well, I don't think so. I don't think so. Because we see, as we mentioned previously, Gog is the Antichrist figure. He was the Jewish conception of the Antichrist figure, the great end times military enemy of God and Israel.
But he's also a spirit.
But he's also a spirit, and that's the thing. We spend a lot of time as students of Bible prophecy trying to figure out who is Gog. Is it Vladimir Putin or some Russian leader? Well, no, we don't think it has a connection to Russia. Russia will be involved because the whole world is coming against Jerusalem in this final battle that leads up to Armageddon. But it's a spirit that inhabits a human leader. But I think the better way to think of Gog is the commander-in-chief for Satan, because we see the Antichrist in Revelation 12, Revelation 13 as two separate entities, the 12-headed or 7-headed red dragon in Revelation 12. That's where I got 12. The 7-headed red dragon is Satan, but then the 7-headed beast that emerges from the sea in Revelation 13 is a separate entity, and that's the Antichrist. That is Gog.
I have seen that before, where Molech is listed as the big lieutenant to Satan in the rebellion. That may have been in Paradise Lost.
I think so.
But if this is true, then it's a really interesting parallel of the threshing floor of El. At the threshing floor of Arana in Jerusalem, the Antichrist will appear to be wounded in the head, will appear to die, at least that's what most Bible scholars believe, and then he won't be. So if he resurrects at dawn of the third day, and
that would
it's
be that would be quite a deception.
It's Shemyaza.
Yeah, right.
Who is El, who is the one who supposedly can resurrect you at dawn of the third day.
Well, we've got some really fascinating connections here. And again, there I go using that word again. I'm going to have to keep a scorecard.
You need a Spock eyebrow or something when you say fascinating.
Yes. In fact, that's how I learned to do that, by watching Star Trek as a child. Mount Hermon was the threshing floor of El, Shemyaza. We got the threshing floor of Atad, which apparently, you know, again, Sodom, Tal el Hammam in the modern world, apparently the location of the worship of Baal Peor, who I believe is the same entity. We got the threshing floor of Arana in Jerusalem, where all of this battle will be centered because Armageddon, Har Moed is the Hebrew phrase, and that means Mount of Assembly, which is what this war is all about.
And it got translated into Greek, and Greek back into Hebrew, and somehow it became Armageddon.
Yes, the Ayin translated into a gamma. And so anyway, it's for Jerusalem. Armageddon is fought at Jerusalem, not at Megiddo. But
that's Mike Kaiser who actually makes that. It's
well, Mike Kaiser,
us.
And that goes back to a scholar by the name of Charles A. Torrey in the Harvard Theological Review back in the 1930s.
Up.
So, yeah, this is not us just trying to come up with something new and different. This was a scholar in the 1930s who said, no, we've transliterated it wrong from Greek back to Hebrew back to English.
Ayin to Gamma to Gimel.
Yeah, and Har Moed is in Isaiah 14, which talks about this rebel from Eden and wanting to establish his Har Moed, his Mount of Assembly in the far reaches of the north. So anyway, the Har Moed at the heart of this battle is Mount Zion, the Temple Mount in Jerusalem. Yes. So you've got that threshing floor. You've got the threshing floor of El on Mount Hermon. You've got this Sodom threshing floor of Atad. But you've also then got the Mount of Olives just across the Kidron Valley.
Yes.
And that's significant. And I point this out in my forthcoming book, that Solomon was tempted or compelled or deceived into building a high place for the Ammonite god Milcom.
Blackmailed.
Blackmailed, perhaps. He had an Ammonite
Honey,
wife.
Honey, if you want to visit me tonight, right. You're going to have to.
Yes, the harem has set some conditions, Solomon. Mm-hmm. If you want to visit, you're going to have to build these high places. Yeah. Well, one of them was for the god Milcom. Well, Milcom was the chief god of the people of Ammon, one of the small kingdoms east of the Jordan River. Milcom was just an Ammonite word similar to the Hebrew word melech, which means king. Well, a scholar did some research on this and found that the Ammonites did not worship a god named Milcom. That was just the title of their chief god, who was El.
Well, Molech is probably also a title.
And Molech was
just
the
MLK.
Hebrew. Right, exactly. The Hebrews took Milcom, and because they liked to play with language to insult or cast shame on those entities mm-hmm. that were deceiving the Israelites and the Jews into worshiping other gods. For example, Astarte is Ashtoreth in the Bible. Mm-hmm. By changing the vowels, you change the meaning of the word to shameful thing, like mm-hmm. Saul's son Ishbaal was called Ishbosheth. Well, Milcom becomes Molech, and we see that in 2 Kings, where Milcom and Molech are both called the chief god or the abomination of the Ammonites.
So this is the entity that they want to bring through the threshing floor?
This is the entity they want to bring through the threshing floor. The Mount of Olives is significant because it's higher than the Temple Mount. So this high place for this god, Milcom, Molech, El, Shemiyaza, Saturn, whatever, same entity, different name, is 200 feet higher. It was looking down on the temple of God.
You know, I love it. I love the way the Lord works. It's like he says to the fallen realm, okay, I'll give you a head start.
Yes, yes. And we'll see if you can keep up.
Yeah, exactly. Oh, wait, I'm everywhere at the same time.
Exactly. Everywhere and at every place.
Every when.
So the final week of Jesus' life, we see that he splits his time between the Temple Mount and the Mount of Olives, those two locations which are connected through this fallen entity who wanted to be the king.
Yes.
Mount Hermon. The small hill on mm-hmm. which Sodom lied was built.
Listening to all this, I just suddenly, and I can't remember where the address, in the Bible, the chapter and verse. There's a psalm, I think, that talks about Mount Hermon and pits it against the Mount of Olives or the Mount of the Assembly.
It's the Mount of the Assembly. You're right. And that's Psalm 68. I wish I'd thought of that. Psalm 68.
I win.
Yes, you win the Psalms. Psalm 68, beginning at verse 15, which reads, O mountain of God, mountain of Bashan, O many-peaked mountain, mountain of Bashan. Now, we know the mountain of God is Zion, not this mountain in Bashan. This many-peaked mountain can only be Mount Hermon because
it's the
southernmost peak in the anti-Lebanon range.
Yes, but here's the great thing. The Lord did take it back.
He did, but here's the other thing that's fascinating. As Dr. Heiser has pointed out, in Hebrew, mountain of God is Har Elohim.
And it likely, mountain of the gods.
Mountain of the gods, correct. Oh, mountain of the gods, mountain of Bashan.
Mountain of the small g gods,
correct.
The fallen angels.
And then it says, verse 16, why do you look with hatred, O many-peaked mountain, at the mount that God desired for his abode? Yes, where Yahweh will dwell forever. This shows the competition between those two peaks, those two mountains. Mm-hmm. What's even more fascinating is that it continues. Fascinating. The chariots of God are twice 10,000, thousands upon thousands. The Lord is among them. Sinai is now in the sanctuary, but the New English translation makes more sense. The Lord comes from Sinai in holy splendor.
Mm-hmm.
This is a military operation in the heavenlies as God goes to Bashan, goes to Mount Hermon, and verse 18, you ascended on high, leading a host of captives in your train.
Yahweh,
yes. Now, check this. Psalm 82, which we talked about before, this courtroom scene in heaven where God condemns the small g gods mm-hmm. for judging unjustly. God has taken his place in the divine council. In the midst of the gods, he holds judgment. But the term in Hebrew is Adat El. A dot L can also mean the assembly of L.
Oh my goodness, I love that.
Psalm 82 then could read, God stands in the assembly or has taken his place in the assembly of L. Oh. He barged in on a meeting of this fallen god.
They're having their conference.
And his minions. Exactly. Think about, maybe this describes
the transfiguration.
Well, this is the transfiguration also, but God, Yahweh, it may be the transfiguration. This might be the moment where God descends and condemns the watchers.
Could be. Yes, it could be. What I find interesting about Psalm 68, talking about the number of chariots that Yahweh has,
yes,
that it gets back to this whole threshing floor of El, the fact that they get in their chariots. And they ride a day, and a second day,
right,
and the dawn
right.
of the third day they arrive. Well,
oh,
guess what? I've got chariots too, and they're more than yours.
A lot more than yours, yes. And then God, of course, says in verse 6 of Psalm 82, I said, you are gods, sons of the Most High, all of you. Nevertheless, like men, you shall die and fall like any prince. And then the psalmist, Asaph, who was just written some
psalms.
Amazing psalms. Arise, O God, judge the earth, for you shall inherit all the nations. That's the promise of mm-hmm. God returning to earth, which we see in Ezekiel 39.
It says, boom, mic drop, right here.
It does.
I'll be here all eternity.
Exactly. So ultimately, that is the promise when God is on the battlefield in Ezekiel 39:7, and he is the Holy One in Israel. He inherits all of the nations, establishes a new heaven and a new earth right here on this planet, restores it to its original factory settings, and boy, there are some places in this world that are indescribably beautiful now, but just imagine how it will be when sin and death has been removed.
Are no more. That is going to be so, so incredible, and it is such a contrast to what we read about in Sodom. The ruins, it's just nothing but desert and just demons everywhere. That's all going to be gone.
Yeah.
This whole world is going to be recreated at the end of the millennial age, and we're going to see a brand new heaven and a brand new earth. Even the stars are going to be new. Why? Because the stars also represent the current domain of the angelic realm, both fallen and unfallen. I think the Lord is starting, as you say, back to default factory settings, the original design, and the Lord, he is in Israel. He is reigning.
And restores us to the divine assembly.
Yes.
When he brings Eden back to earth. And that's what he meant when he said to Abraham in Genesis 15, verse 5, look toward heaven and number the stars if you were able to number them. Then he said to him, so shall your offspring be, not as numerous as the stars, but like the stars. In other words, like the angels in being restored to the family, like the prodigal son welcomed home, the signet ring on the finger, the robe, the party with the fatted calf.
Oh,
that's
wow.
Your future, if you have accepted Jesus Christ as your Lord and Savior. That's why we study prophecy and why we're so excited to do this program.
Amen to that. Boy,
thank you for watching.
What's next week? We don't know.
It's going to be good, though. Thank you for watching. This is Unraveling Revelation from Skywatch TV.
Unraveling Revelation is part of Skywatch TV, a viewer-supported ministry. To learn more about Skywatch TV and the work of our sister ministry, Whispering Ponies Ranch, please visit our website, skywatchtv.com. And please join us for our weekly study of the Bible, verse by verse, in chronological order, online at gilberthouse.org.